with the first pick in the draft, second pick, the third pick, with the fourth pick, the fifth pick.
Here's the pitch. He swings as a long drive to right, and it is a home run for Gibson.
Matthews got it back, sets, looks, throws. He's got Golden Tate, who makes the catch inside the 15, inside the 10, and he's breaking away. He's into the end zone. Pack the bag, start the plane. This game is over.
You're listening to Fantasy Advice Bros. Here's your host, Ali.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ali. I am joined by my host, Rams, and we are the Fantasy Advice Bros. This week, we continue to bring you baseball, followed by some college football updates. And Rams, it's still a warm summer day in my garage. How are you doing?
I'm doing well for the most part. I'm conflicted today.
Oh, sexy.
You know, it occurred to me earlier that our listeners either find me to be very, very immature.
I do.
Or they find me to be very deep. Either way, I'm good with it because, you know, I'm feeling something different all the time. Today, I'm conflicted, dude. So, like, let's get right into it, right? We're coming up on the home stretch of baseball. Like, there's just a few more weeks in the regular season. And, you know, we've talked. I've resurrected my season. I was 1-4. If the season ended today, I'd be in the playoffs, but I'm still jockeying for a position. Where I am now doesn't really matter.
Okay.
But here's my issue.
Okay. Before you get into your issue and issues, because you opened conflicted, but you didn't ask me how am I doing. And before you go down through your issues and we're in week 16 of baseball, can you ask me?
My sincerest apologies. How are you doing, brother?
Thank you for asking. When I did my last Enemy Titans podcast, I had opened with I just got done giving my son a timeout, and I wanted to tell the people I got done giving my son another timeout because it hasn't even been but a few days and he needed another one. So my feelings aren't very high right now, where if you're feeling conflicted, I need a hug.
Oh, this is, you know what the only positive of this is now the listeners can think you're volatile as well. So
okay, and one more thing with that I did want to talk to you about, because this season I got you to watch Game of Thrones with me, and I want to talk theories about Game of Thrones before we go through playoff baseball.
Okay.
I want to tell you why I think Ned Stark is still alive.
Jesus, with this theory. You know what's funny?
No, I don't know what's funny. Day, please tell us.
The day after an episode of Game of Thrones airs, you can't go online without escaping it. Like, it's fucking everywhere. You could go to MSNBC.com and it'd be like, Game of Thrones last night. But, like, the thing is, I have not seen this theory anywhere.
Yes,
like, nowhere.
Because I made it up.
Either you need to take this fucking theory to Vegas and bet the mortgage.
You know what?
On it.
That's what I tell my buddies.
You know you can gamble on Game of Thrones. Isn't
yes,
that
yes,
pathetic?
I do know that, and that's why I think it's all a sham, because you can't win. Like Adrian tells Rocky, you can't win when he's fighting Drago. Okay, so I want to give the people context to my theory that you're telling me I'm absurd about.
God.
I think Ned Stark is alive because his son Bronn Stark, Bronn the Builder, the three-eyed raven seer, who can travel through time and he can cause rifts in time. I think he foresaw his father was going to die. I think he forewarned Ned. I think a faceless man died in Ned's place. And I think Ned is hiding out in the Citadel.
I'm going to indulge. I have no idea what the Citadel is, by the way. But
it's where Sam is in with all those books.
Lord.
And he's eating that crappy
soup. Yeah. He's a fucking maester. Whatever. All right. So all here's right. How I'm going to indulge you. If Ned is...
Woo-woo, I'm getting indulged.
If he's faceless, then how? Because only Arya was the faceless one,
Not
right?
A true statement. I think Arya is spoon-feeding you through as she was trying to be Walter Frey 101 for you, showing you how easy it is to be the faceless one. So here's one of two theories I've deductively come to. I threw it out on Anime Titans. I'm going to throw it out here for the first time with you. I wonder if the person who trained Arya on how to be faceless is actually Ned.
My brain's going to explode.
I'll try it one more time for you.
I can't compute. I know. I remember that guy. That guy was really fucking annoying and boring. I know exactly who you're talking about, though. We haven't seen him in a couple of seasons.
We saw him last season. We saw him a whole bunch.
That was last season?
Yes.
She left that place.
She did.
I don't know, dude. Arya's been traveling forever.
That's true. And now she's conflicted about being a Stark again or not.
No, that's it. The fucking wolf basically like was a metaphor for you can't go home. Go do something else with your life.
Really, I found it a metaphor to be go home, go help your family.
Holy shit. We took that like dramatically differently.
We did. See?
See, you think she's going north. I think she's going to head south.
Well, I didn't say I think she's going north, so you put words in my mouth because I don't want to skew my own theory here. I think that it was a metaphor for go home, go help your family.
Cool. I guess we'll find out because we took that the exact opposite.
Okay. And then I know you're dying to go on your rant because you're a little itchy to do it, which is...
conflicted.
But first, I want to do news and notes because I think there were some major injuries that happened this week, right?
Talk to me. Remind me.
Steven Strasburg?
See, here's the thing, man.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? We talked about it when it happened.
We did?
Because they put Kershaw on the DL. And
are you sure we talked about it? I don't remember.
That I'll refresh your memory.
All right.
Just like you happen to refresh mine. And Strasburg left the game in the second inning the same day that Kershaw did on Sunday, right? And I go, this is not good. I'm like, this is not good. Anytime there's a problem with an arm for a pitcher, it's not really rocket science. That's not fucking good, right? He had like arm fatigue or something. So Dusty Baker, the manager for the Nats after the game, is like, oh, he's fine. He's fine. He's fine. He should make his next start. He's not making his next start. But they're like, oh, it's okay. We won't have to put him on the DL. And then sure enough, they put him on the DL. The Nats are a lot like the Mets in that they don't know how to really like communicate injuries effectively. At this point, if you're a Strasburg owner, you're still not fully panicked. I know that he's got like a injury history and he's always a bit of a risk.
But you mean 9 times in 8 seasons on the DL?
Jesus
yes.
Christ.
I'll repeat that. 9 times in 8 seasons. I'm worried.
I understand still everything that's come out has said he should only miss one turn through the rotation. Now, again, we just highlighted how they've been a bit deceptive in the way that they're communicating this injury. But still, I mean, you're hoping for the best at this point, hoping he only misses one start, which is Friday, I think.
Okay, and you mentioned Kershaw, and we'll get into some free agents. I have a feeling you have a few tricks up your sleeve for Kershaw owners, because if I was a Kershaw owner today, when Freddie Freeman went down months ago, I was having a heart attack. I fell out of first place after the guy went down, and I was like, oh, fuck. So if I own Clayton Kershaw right now, Mr. 14 wins before the All-Star game, it was like one of the first times ever in MLB history, I'd be crying in my pillow right now. I'm putting my blanket over my head, right?
Yes, I'm with you. I would also be in a corner convulsing somewhere. But, dude, it fucking sucks to tell you the truth. There's no way really to reconcile it. Like, you can be logistical and you can say he pitched so well this year that he gave you a season's worth of value. He really, really did. But
he did, but now it's playoff
but
time.
But who cares? Right, exactly. Like, you are where you are now, and you need him, like, now.
That's right, because
so it just doesn't matter.
We're,
right?
What, 16 weeks in?
Yeah.
What would typically be, in fantasy football terms, the Super Bowl, right, the championship game.
Dun, dun, dun.
And here we are. We're trudging through. We're coming up on the playoffs, and as I'm doing the math of who gets in and who gets out, I realize two things. I'm just outside of getting in because the top 6 of 12 teams make it. You are just inside of getting in.
I was alluding to that earlier.
I need you to win, and I need myself to continue winning, hopefully. So there's still a lot of moving pieces. The other thing I want to touch on news and notes before we get to players to pick up is a guy we mentioned on last podcast, and you sold him so well to me, Trevor Cahill, that
I knew this was coming.
I picked him up real time, but I'm conflicted because I picked him up during the podcast, which, by the way, was the first time ever during a podcast I did, and lo and behold, the pitcher, Trevor Cahill, gets traded, and I'm like, uh-oh, and I've seen his ownership has come down 6% since he got traded. He's now down to 28% ownership. How should I feel about Trevor Cahill getting traded? Because I deployed him before he got traded because we set our lineups once a week, and I'm the...
Which was okay, yeah, because, yeah, he had a start at home, and, you know, like we talked about last week, he was terrific at home pitching in San Diego and abysmal on the road. So it was a really, really straightforward thing. Home, start, road, bench. I knew he was on the block, you know, because he's having kind of like a resurgent season, so Padres want to unload, and they want to get some talent because they fucking blow, right? So they want to get anything for any veteran they possibly can. The thing is, it's tricky. If you own him like you do, I'd feel kind of blah A couple of reasons. One, we have no idea how he's going to pitch outside of San Diego since he has a new home park. If it's going to be like he did the rest of the year, he's trash. And then the other thing is, we don't even know if he's going to stick in that starting rotation. If the Royals upgrade their rotation even further, which they're looking to do, they're only 2.5 out of the division. They're going to sign him to the bullpen, and then at that point, the second that happens, you just cut him.
Well, right now I'm not too concerned because he's supposed to be getting a start this weekend.
On Saturday, yeah.
So I'm very excited to see him get a start and see what happens in Kansas City. It was just unexpected, but I know these things happen, right? Because we talked about last podcast where you've mentioned several times JV, Justin Verlander, is on the trading block, and I tell you it's all conjecture until it actually happens, right? It means nothing until it happens. And so Trevor Cahill, a guy we advocated for, there it is. It happened, and lo and behold. All right, so for the news and notes section, I think it that does it. But what I want to do is...
Yeah, like to your credit, this is kind of... The calm before the storm.
I'm getting credit. Look at that.
And I indulge your Game of Thrones theory.
I get a gold star today, folks.
So, the trade deadline is Monday. We're shooting this Thursday. There's a shit ton of reports and conjecture and rumors. Since, our last podcast, nothing super dramatic has happened. Like you said, Verlander hasn't been moved. Yu Darvish hasn't been moved. A bunch of kind of sort of smaller moves at this point. Things will happen. We'd probably have to touch on them next podcast.
Which I'll just say quickly about Yu Darvish. I'm thrilled. I played him this week. The guy blows. What
Dude,
happened?
Okay. He doesn't blow, but holy shit. So he pitched last night against the Marlins, who have an okay offense. It's not terrific. And he was at home. Dude, I put that game on. It was 11-5. And I'm like, who the fuck pitched for the Rangers? Because their starting rotation outside of him, Cole Hamels is okay. It's shitty. And I saw it was Darvish, and my face lit up. I was like, wow, I cannot believe this. He's actually not shitty. That was just a horrendous start. But he's a really good pitcher. There are concerns with him. He's going to be a free agent in the offseason. Kind of going off topic a little bit here. But yeah, he is, for the most part, a good pitcher.
Okay, and let's play a quick game now that we're finishing up news and notes.
I love games.
We're going to play a game called the UB ESPN To It segment.
Fucking my favorite game of all time.
And there's three to talk about, but two
three?
But two on the ESPN report.
This is fabulous.
So I'll name the two. They're both Cubs. You had mentioned Ian Happ and Kyle Schwarber.
Dude, I talked about Ian Happ over a
month ago. Yep, I checked back in our names. And ESPN is now advocating for him.
Now?
And Kyle Schwarber as well.
Schwarber I get because, he went down and that was big news. And then he came back up. For the people that waited for him to come back up and to see how he's doing, well, he's doing well enough. He's not doing, great, but I'm happy with what I've got thus far. I picked him up. The only thing with him is kind of look out because they're sitting him against lefties. So if you're sending a weekly lineup like we are and the Cubs are facing, let's say, three or four lefties, maybe you want to bench him if you've got a better option. But for the most part, he's come back. He's hitting for power. He's hitting in a premium spot in the lineup. I don't know how Ian Happ is being mentioned now. that kind of blows my mind.
Because you think it's late and people should have picked him up earlier when you were mentioning him a month ago.
Yeah, dude. So he came up and then the questions were, is he going to stick? He was their top hitting prospect. And I think he's eligible at second and he's eligible in the outfield. Well, he came up and he stuck. He started well, he slowed down, but he's been pretty good ever since. But the nice thing is, he's also hitting in a nice spot in that lineup, and he's starting just about every day because of his positional versatility, and Joe Maddon loves that shit. To me, I felt like that was a player that was scooped up in most competitive leagues long ago. I could be wrong if ESPN's advocating now, but shit.
I'll check his ownership in a second, but the third person I wanted to mention is somebody you and I have talked about. I picked up John Lackey. I deployed him this week.
Ugh,
he's 52% owned, and you know what? He won the other day, so I'm not mad at that.
Gross. He's the poster child for all you want from your pitcher is a win because he pitched like shit. Did you know he hit four batters that tied a record or something?
I only knew after he did it.
He hit four fucking batters. Where is your control? You're 38 years old. You're a veteran. But, to your point, he got the win, and you'll take it, and that's all that really matters.
And Ian Happ is 44% owned, and his ownership has gone down 11%.
I don't know. I know with...
I think I can tell you why on Ian Happ. I'm looking at it. I'll read his numbers to you backwards. It's 06000. Gross, gross, gross.
So he's kind of cold, but...
Kind of cold?
He's still... Dude, how many weeks in are we? Like, you haven't learned at this point that...
Consecutive zeros?
Players go through it? Yeah, dude. Some players go into, like, 0 for 23 slumps, and then they'll come out of it.
Happ is heading to the bench after starting the past two games at 0-5. Ooh. I don't know if I'm going to advocate for Ian Happ anymore.
That's only one start. Madden likes to shuffle his lineup quite a bit. But he'll get multiple other shots, and as long as he starts to produce again. I mean, it's like anybody else we talk about, right? If this little cold streak continues for a little bit longer, then okay, yeah, cool. But for the most part, I like where he sits in the lineup, and I like what he brings to the table.
Okay, now let's advocate. Let's tell the people about a guy you've advocated for on a few podcasts, and he's 66% owned. His ownership has gone up 14% in the last week. Tommy Pham of the St. Louis Cardinals, and I'll tell you what, I didn't. 3 weeks ago on the podcast, you had mentioned to me to pick him up. I kind of didn't do it. I regret it. You ended up doing it. And I'm going to read his numbers backwards. It's 161910. Tommy Pham is very deployable, especially well for an outfielder, as outfielders at this point in free agency, not to a premium, but finding a hot one is tough.
It's thinning out a little bit.
And you were on the Tommy Pham train weeks ago.
Dude, I can't get enough of this guy. This dude bats second in the lineup, and he's doing fucking everything. He's hitting for a nice average. He's hitting for power. He's stealing bags. I really cannot get enough of this guy. He's somebody that, like, at the start of next year, I'll be like, I'd kind of be off. With some guys, like, I'll watch them, and they'll, like, tear shit up, but I'll be like, this seems kind of sort of, like, fluky. Like, look, Tommy Pham is 29 years old. He's breaking out now. Like, most people are going to figure, oh, this is the outlier, but who cares? We're not drafting for next year right now. We're not picking up for next year right now. If he's still out there, fucking grab him and start him, because he's been terrific.
All right. And then I want to get into the segment where I remind the people I'm the fantasy baseball virgin. You're the fantasy baseball veteran. And we've talked about in the past how in NFL land, you don't tell people to start Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees. You're starting those guys. Those guys are stud. So we agreed we'd follow the CBS rule of if ownership is sub 80%, we'll talk about the person. And if it's not, we're not going to talk about them because Kershaw, Max Scherzers of the world, you're starting those guys.
Well, if you remember, I actually bitched about that. And I said that was a major, major cop-out because 80% to me is just far too high. Like when I'm recommending people, I'm looking give
right
or take
so, 50%. Sub 50. Yeah, so we want to keep it at sub 50. The reason why I opened up with that 80 number is I want to tell you I've owned Aaron Nola all season, the pitcher for the Philadelphia Phillies, and do you know his ownership is now up to 75% because it went up 5% this week?
Permission to launch back into my tirade about why I'm conflicted.
Ooh, but one moment, please. His numbers backwards consecutively, 29, 27, 10, 12, 28, 25, and his report reads so lukewarm. I love the guy. He should be 100% owned. And I want to tell the people that his ownership has only gone up. That means he's owned in three quarters of leagues. So he might still be out there in your league, and playoff time is heating up. You might want to go check him out now.
Yeah, yeah, look, if he's out there, it's a fucking no-brainer. There's no reason why he should be available. I know last night, 7 innings, 10 Ks. He's doing a little bit of everything. And he was going to lead me to why I'm conflicted, right? Because, you know, like we've been discussing, we're almost to the end of the season, and we're both kind of jockeying for position. And my thing is, I'm happy with where I'm at, given the way I started. But at the same time, like, I'm short on starting pitching, right? And at the same time,
do you want to trade or something?
No. Let me get there. So at the same time, like, I want you to do well. I want you to succeed. I want you to kill it. I've been helping you all year.
Ooh,
but
ooh.
But what fucks me up is, like, I'm looking over at your roster now, and, like, you start Aaron Nola, and you start James Paxton. And these are two dudes that, like, I absolutely, absolutely loved. So, like, I'm conflicted now in the sense that there's a really, really good chance you might beat me out for a playoff spot with dudes that, like, I told you to fucking draft. Now, people listening could probably say, well, jackass, you should have just drafted them yourself, which is fair and it's valid and I get it. Hence why I'm so fucking conflicted, because, like, I'm legitimately happy that this is your first time ever doing it, and you're in a primo spot.
So pause your spilled milk, buy me tissue conversation.
I mean, in my defense, when you
we started the podcast, in the first few episodes, I admit to the people as the baseball virgin, you were the veteran. You helped me draft about 3/4 of my team, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm not denying that. Like,
And you're ahead of me in the playoff race.
Fucking for now. But, like, if you win this week and I lose, guess what? We're more or less tied with positioning, fighting for the last spot or two.
Us both a favor and keep winning so I don't hear about spilled milk again.
That's what I'm trying to do, but it'd be easier if I had the fucking starters that you did. That's my problem.
I think recently your child turned from 0 to 1. He spills milk, and this is spilled milk. Let's move on from your spilled milk, please.
Thank you. Thank you for semi-indulging me after I listened to how Ned Stark is still alive somehow, some way.
If you want, I can revisit the theory for you.
Oh, please don't.
Okay, so let's talk about another guy you've advocated for pretty hard. I ended up picking him up last week. I like the guy. Gerardo Parra.
Dude, remember, I would not shut up about him because he's killing it. Mind you, he's continued to kill it. And Bud Black, manager for the Rockies, is so happy with him. He's moved him up to cleanup. Do you know how nice it is to have the cleanup hitter for the fucking Colorado Rockies in the middle of the summer hitting in that park? Like, that's fantastic. And there's no reason why he can't keep this up. Parra's been around for a little bit. He's more than capable. There's nothing really fluky here. This was a terrific pickup. And, yes, I'm patting myself on the back.
He's 43% owned. His ownership has gone up 17%, which is substantial. But I want to tell the people, reading his stats backwards, it's 5-3-1. He had 2 scratches because of injury. And then, 2, he's doing pretty hot. If you look at his numbers, he's been slashing 513, 500, followed by 769 with 2 home runs, 12 RBIs in the last 10 games.
Dude, think about that. Hold on. He's hitting 500 in his last 10 games.
Yep, and his on-base percent is over 700.
That's absurd.
It's like, phenomenal.
Yeah. and this week, they're on the road, so you can't even say he's just a product of his home park because he's been doing it on the road.
Right. This is well beyond Coors Field. I completely agree. So that's why I wanted to put it out there about Gerardo Parra. And I was trying to tell the people this is kudos to you because you're the one who mentioned him, right?
Yes.
I bet you in a week or two ESPN will finally catch up to the guy.
To tell you the truth, I think so, especially if the ownership is climbing, but it's still at sub 50. This is a dude that's absolutely raking right now at the right time of the season. So, yeah, I think so.
All right. Speak of raking, we still want to talk some college football. So why don't you go ahead and give the people some names? Let's start with pitching because.
Hold on. Before you get there. Free agents, right? We wanted to mention just a few in baseball.
Yes, and I was saying let's start with pitchers that are free agents that you might advocate for because if I own Steven Strasburg or Clayton Kershaw, which I'm not fortunate enough to own either, but you're listening and you're wondering who to pick up, what free agent pitcher would you start with?
Here's the thing. It's pretty light with starting pitching. The only one that really I'll throw out as I'm intrigued and I would kind of like at this point is a rookie for the Cincinnati Reds. His name is Luis Castillo. So he came up just a few weeks ago, and he's pitched against the most brutal fucking schedule. He's pitched against the Diamondbacks, the Yankees, the Nationals. I mean, you're talking top 5, top 10 offenses. And he's held his own. What I like about him, high strikeout upside. I know you like to do that thing where you look up these players and you can take a look at some of their stats. I'm sure his strikeouts are up there. He throws 97. He's come out of this little stretch with like a 4 ERA, which given the competition he's pitched against is pretty admirable, especially for a rookie. I like the K's, dude. So that's somebody that I would like to pick up. And I think his ownership isn't too high.
You know, I'll give you a lot of credit. First of all, he's listed as both a relief pitcher and a starting pitcher.
I didn't even know that. Nice.
20% owned.
Perfect.
Here's what I'm going to open with why you are totally wrong about him, and then I'll tell you why you're 100% correct. His win-loss record is 1-4, which looks horrible.
Hold on. That points to what I was saying about the competition.
I'll compliment you. I was getting there. If I read his fantasy numbers backwards, it's -4. 4, 5, 28, 2, and 10. And in his wins, he's averaging 8 Ks. Even in his losses, he's averaging 5 Ks. So he is a strikeout machine. And I'm not sure how they're deploying him, though, because it looks like sometimes his innings are...
No, just look to when he's been a starter. If he's had a short outing, yeah, it's because maybe he got pulled earlier for a pinch hitter or something like that. Okay. But the schedule lightens up, and I would like to see where the story goes.
But to your point, it's so late in the season that you're probably just hurting if you lost...
Like
Strasburg or Kershaw. You're not going to find anything comparable to them anyway.
You're exactly right. Like, you know, we talked about earlier how I'm thin at starting pitching, and I scour the waivers like nobody else, and there's nothing out there that really, really stands out to me, which I guess makes sense. Like you said, you know, we're this late in the season. You're not going to find, like, a gem. But that's why of everybody that's out there, he's one that I would take a flyer on.
Let's talk hitters. What do you got?
Okay, so you're going to like this. Last week, you asked me about Paul DeJong on the St. Louis Cardinals.
I did.
The week before, I don't know, and I was like, fuck that noise. Now, I'm reversing course. I'm on the train, dude.
Oh, yeah? What happened?
This guy has not stopped hitting. I thought he was going to stop hitting because there's really nothing in his track record to suggest that this is real or sustainable, but he's been fucking killing it, and I think he's still out there for some people.
He's definitely still out there. He's 53% owned. His ownership has only gone up 7%. Reading his numbers backwards, it's 178.376.
He does hit home runs. He just will not cease to hit home runs. And the nice thing is, he hits right behind Tommy Pham in the lineup.
Oh, look at that! Your sexy combination.
I know you like that, right?
Bash Brothers. Yeah.
I tied that in effectively. So he's batting third, and the Cards' offense is starting to wake up a little bit. Matt Carpenter's leadoff again. And he's liking that spot. So, yeah, dude, I'm on DeJong now.
All right, good for you. Hey, and this is one I caught before you did, so that's kudos to me, right?
That's true, yeah.
All right, any other tricks up your sleeve for the week?
Yeah, I guess we just have to mention, I know his ownership percentage is skyrocketing. The Red Sox called up their top third base prospect. Rafael Devers is his last name. He's a 20-year-old kid. He's got all the tools. He's got everything you could possibly want. The Red Sox have had trouble at third base all year. They're going to give him a chance. They just traded for Eduardo Nunez. But still, they're going to give Devers a chance. And again, he's got everything you could possibly want. So I would grab him and just see what happens. If he's going to get consistent at bats and he's going to hit, he could make a difference for you.
Well, I'll tell you what. He's played 2 games, and his fantasy points backwards are 7-2.
Yeah, he hit his first home run last night, I believe.
So his ownership is only 31%. It's gone up 25% this week, obviously.
Yeah, they just called him.
I have one curveball for you, and I want to get your opinion on it. And I know we both watch PTI, big advocates. We've always watched Wilbon and Kornheiser.
Yeah.
They've been talking about Tim Tebow might get called up.
I can't. Really? I can't do it. He fucking
the
sucks.
The question for the people is the following. If he's going to be a hot prospect coming around the time of playoff, would you wait and see with him, or would you stash and hope?
Okay. I respect that you're the baseball virgin.
Yes.
So let's just clarify this for now. He is not a hot prospect. He is not a prospect. He's a fucking sideshow. If they called him up, they'd call him up in September.
So the answer is no, folks.
He's not a good baseball player. You're asking me, I'm telling you.
Well, if they call him up to the majors,
they're going to call him up just to sell tickets. No, go look at his minor league numbers. He's batting something like
2. Before you blow up mine in the people's eardrums, so you're not an advocate.
No, he can't play baseball. He sucks.
Okay.
It'd be a sideshow.
Okay. Let's move on to non-sideshow topics. I'm thrilled for 2 reasons. One, Walter White has lit me up the most beautiful hookah in the world. Thank you, Walter. And 2, let's start talking college football. And the very first thing I wanna redraw for the people is we've both done college football for a long time. I've done it for 10 years. You've done it for 8. We both won championships. We both lost a championship. We've married our abilities together for the last 4 years. We draft teams together. We somehow don't kill each other. We agree on lineups.
Yeah, it works.
And whatnot. And when we're doing all that, we've been following a guy. He used to run College Football Geek. He now runs his own website, and it's Mike Bainridge. And his new website, which we have joined, is patreon.com. And what I want to do is I want to make sure I spell this right for the people. It is patreon.com. And he's only charging $2 a month. And if you want everything, as he calls it, it's only $3 a month. And for college football, items, that is a very reasonable price. And for what he's giving away on the site, it's team-by-team previews. He's going to give you weekly starts and sits, weekly waiver ads, impact freshmen, impact JUCOs, and he's got a lot of those articles already up. I'll tell you what, it's going to be the only website we use all season when we A, draft, and B, pick up free agents, because this guy has been doing college football for so long, he's like a know-it-all.
Yeah, it's nice. I know we've kind of talked about him quite a bit now, but it's just nice to have a place to go because it's tough with college football, man. It's really, really tough. So it's nice to be able to go somewhere and just have everything compact and available.
Okay, speak of going somewhere. I know we're going to talk about guys we like this season. We've talked draft strategy. If you had a first-round pick, what would you do? Who's your top-rated QB, wide receiver, running back? I want to talk about a guy that you've always liked and I've always liked. Darren Carrington II, formerly of Oregon, got kicked off the team. He's had many off-field issues. I don't want to get into him. I don't really care. But he was a graduate transfer to Utah. And Utah, infamous for their special teams and their defense. But Trevor Booker, who came out of there in the Denver Broncos drafted, he was great when he was in Utah. He's been
Devontae.
Yeah. Thank you for correcting me. He's been death in the NFL, but he was great in college.
He was a rookie.
What do you think of Darren Carrington going to Utah?
I like it. My thing is, one, I know we don't want to deep dive too much, but is he going to be able to stay out of trouble? And then assuming he does, if I remember, and you can refresh my memory, they had a QB at Utah. I think his name was Troy Williams or something, that was more of a runner. He wasn't the best passer. So I wonder if Carrington's upside is going to be a little bit limited. Like, I don't know that I would target him. You know, if he were there towards the end of the draft, I'd say, ooh, let's take a flyer.
I don't think their quarterback was intentionally, from what I remember watching, a runner. I think he was just trying to stay out of trouble. I think he's trying to be a passer, and he's just not a very good one.
Okay, yeah. So then, cool. Even then, to the same argument then, he probably caps Carrington's upside a little bit.
I slightly disagree. I think it gives him more upside for two reasons. Because one, Carrington can carry the ball. He can run like a running back. And he led Oregon in receiving, so you can do dump-offs and screens to him. And bubble screens in college are very infamous because open field tackling in college is basically non-existent.
Bubble screens, jet sweeps, end-arounds, all that shit. I would agree with you.
And think about it, the defenses Utah plays. They don't play too many good defensive teams. I'm not worried about him. I actually kind of like him. I don't like him enough where I take him in the first three rounds, but if we feel good about what we did in the first four rounds and he's sitting there in the fifth round, I would nudge you and be like, you know what?
The fifth round, I couldn't. See, we just told the people that we don't really, like, kill each other, but, like, this one is kind of tough. That's high, isn't it? Fifth round?
For a guy that I think might end the year with about 12 touchdowns and close to 1,000 overall yards between running and catching. Because I think I don't think he went there to come off the bench. I think he went there to start and do stuff.
I would guess that he plays as well. I'm in lockstep with you on that. But I don't – I mean, Utah just doesn't throw a ton to begin with. They're more of a running team.
Which is
now, if you think Carrington's going to carry 6-7 times a game, then that's a different story.
Well, remember Williams, the running back last year who ran for like a million yards, even though...
he retired.
I got to tell the people, I am very mad. We drafted Williams at the beginning of the year because I'm like, oh, Devontae Booker's backup should be fine. And he was running on fire. He got hurt. He retired for four games for unknown reasons.
Some personal stuff he needed to work out.
He came back and we talked about picking him up. We never did. And then lo and behold, he averaged like 6 yards a carry. He was rushing for well over 100 yards for almost every game through the end of the season. I was like, mother effer.
Yep.
I wish we would have picked this guy back up.
Yes.
So I think that offense.
It can definitely sustain a top running back. I just don't know. Like, if you think back, how many productive fantasy wideouts have they had in the past few years?
Well, I like him because he's dual position.
Sure, and that's fair.
So let's get into it a little. Let's do this. We, in our pre-production meeting, said, let's talk about players we like. I'll let you go ahead first.
I like it when you make it sound like all fancy and professional and shit. Like,
well, I know.
It
was a single text message. That's our pre-production meeting. So,
what do you want to do? You want to tackle quarterbacks?
Any way you like. Let's start. We'll touch quarterback. Let's touch running back, and let's touch wide receiver.
All right, cool. So I'll kick us off with quarterback, and I'll needle you a little bit here.
Uh-oh.
So my boy Baker Mayfield, right? I'm well on the bandwagon again, and I say again because I know last year you weren't as big a proponent. You were, you know, we had a bet going the entire season because for some reason
you
wanted to adopt Tommy Armstrong, Nebraska's quarterback, and we had a little bet about who would have more fantasy points at the end of the year, and by like week 7 we stopped even tracking it because it was unnecessary.
Well, hold on. Let's draw this up, right? I was an advocate for Tommy Armstrong's because you could get him so late in the draft where Baker Mayfield was going in the third round.
Third, yeah.
And in the first 4 weeks, Tommy Armstrong had more fantasy points than Baker Mayfield as we were tracking, but Tommy Armstrong got hurt, and his production went down even after he came back, and Baker Mayfield blew him out.
That was a solid
But defense. Here's why you're correct about Baker Mayfield. I'm going to throw a did you know at you that I'm not sure you knew. I also read Phil Steele, the college football guru of gurus online. ESPN hired him a few years ago. He is the number one rated guy in predicting bowl games and winners for the last 18 consecutive years. He rated Oklahoma a top 5 offensive line in the country.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Like, the thing is, even with Mayfield, so D.D. Westbrook was his number one option last year, got drafted in the NFL. But, like, that doesn't scare me. That doesn't bother me. Oklahoma's never lacking for offensive talent.
My point is complimenting what you're saying is because Baker Mayfield, who loves to use his legs. And, by the way, I want to remind the people, I owned him at Texas Tech when he was a true freshman.
Yeah.
I was on the Baker Mayfield train. I'm on it this year hard. Last year, I was like, you can wait a little bit and get somebody who will get you more points. And I was right. You could. But
just not Tommy Armstrong.
Correct, and we didn't even own the guy. Thank you very much.
Thank heavens for that.
Agreed on Baker Mayfield, so I'd call you one for one.
All right, cool.
We've talked about Lamar Jackson,
and we
said Mr. 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns last year. Even if he doesn't replicate and he's 80% of that production, you're likely to have the number one overall QB, so I would still take him with the number one overall pick.
Yeah, and then Mayfield, you know, maybe second or third round. And then I wanted to look a little bit for somebody that maybe not so early but could return good value. Somebody that we did own last year on a bye week or two or something is Jake Browning.
Browning from Washington, right?
Yeah, so I'll let you take this. I do like him.
No, you were – look, we owned – your boyfriend, Pat Mahomes, who you basically put a gun to my head and said, let's draft.
How did that work out? Remind me.
It was fantastic. He was a top 2-3 quarterback in all of college last year.
Thank you.
And he went down. Nick Shimonek came in for him. And there was a bye week right around that time. And lo and behold, we picked up Jake Browning, and it was the week they played Oregon. And
it was a Saturday night. It was on Fox.
And what did we learn is that his coach – hates Oregon because Jake Browning threw 8 touchdown passes for us.
Chris Peterson wanted to shove it up Oregon's ass. It was terrific.
He did, because Oregon used to run up the score against
teams.
Dude,
remember, it was like 56-10 in the fourth quarter. Browning still throwing darts in the red zone.
Yep.
It was terrific.
And he was thrown to Pettis and Ross. Ross got drafted with his sweet 4-2 speed. But Pettis is still there. So to me, Pettis is the receiver to own this year, right? Especially if you're thinking Washington.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Pettis is rated accordingly. I think I saw today he's rated as like a top 5 wideout. He might be the highest rated BCS wideout, FBS, whatever. But going back to Browning, he's somebody that I think you can get a little bit later if you want to.
And by later, you mean like 4th round, 5th round type thing?
Well, what do you think? I mean, you tell me. I think Mayfield 2nd, 3rd. I think Browning maybe 5th or 6th. Right.
Well, so you made fun of me last episode. I said I have done a few mock drafts that I've watched. I haven't actually done them. And quarterbacks are flying off the board.
Shit.
They're flying in the first round. And I told you your boy DeGuise out of LSU, the running back who you love and I love and everybody loves. He averaged over 5.7 yards a carry last year. He was going in the late 1st, early 2nd round.
Dude, I would love that so much. I would love that. Let me tell you. Like, if we could grab Geis in the 1st round and then come back, even if you're like, oh, Rams, we need a quarterback, fine, let's grab Mayfield in the 2nd round. Our team will be terrific.
Okay. Any other quarterbacks you want to advocate for, or do you want to move on to...
No, I've got a couple that I don't like, but we'll save that one for our next podcast.
Okay, let's continue through running backs. So I know you're a big advocate of Saquon Barkley. You wanted to own him last year. I was kind of afraid, but James Franklin has that program on the right track. They are Penn State is red hot right now. They're actually considered a playoff team. Who else that's running backs would you advocate for right now?
Okay, so Mark Walton of Miami, I think he's rated like a top 10 running back. I'm guessing you would have to spend a second or third round pick on him. But he's the guy now. He's not sharing that backfield anymore. Supremely talented. He's a burner, and he can catch a little bit.
So let's talk about Miami for a minute because they're returning 10 of 11 starters on offense. They only lost their quarterback. They actually have a top 10 rated O-line, according to Phil Steele. And Mark Walton last year, when he played, he was averaging over 6 yards a carry.
Oh, yeah, he's a home run hitter.
And you might be right. And the beauty of Miami is this year they have a top 10 rated D-line and linebacking core. So they might be slowing people down and teams that get turnovers. It's fantastic for running backs, right?
Yep, you're exactly right.
So I'm a big advocate of Mark Walton. I would love to get him. And if we got him in the second, third round, I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I'd be all in on that as well. And then the other running back, maybe a round or two later, is Ronald Jones for USC. You know, I've been on him for a couple of years. I know last year we didn't know him. It was a crowded backfield, so I get it. But I don't know what it is with this dude. He's also a home run hitter. Like, 6 carries, 124 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And remember the week we played against him, he fucking crushed us?
Yeah, my only hesitation to him is Sam Darnold, the quarterback of USC, is likely, you said, the number one NFL draft pick. And they're probably going to throw a ton. And we owned Jarius Byrd a few years ago when Cody Kessler was there throwing a ton of touchdowns. And Byrd was getting his, right? So it's likely. I want to throw two names at you that... a couple of guys I like that I want to mention. Last year, I was a big advocate of Justin Jackson of Northwestern.
Yeah, it's your boy. That's why I left it.
And I think he's got to be like a second-round pick.
Of course you do.
I would take him well over Ronald Jones.
Sure.
Justin Jackson is
He was the leading rusher in the Big Ten, no?
Yeah, and not just leading rusher, but touchdowns as well.
Yeah.
And the other guy I want to throw at you, and I picked him up in week 4 or 5, and then I caught him like a jackass. Paul Lindsay of Colorado.
Phil Lindsay, right?
I'm sorry, Phil. That offense is mostly returning what I had. They lost some guys on defense, but he runs and catches the ball. He's great for drop-offs. He gets a ton of carries, and he's likely the goal line back.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
I would be a fan of taking him in the second, third round.
Yep.
I know last year we owned Cameron Pedway of Auburn. The one thing I don't like about him this year is... the Baylor QB transfer, Seth Russell's there, and he can throw the ball and he can run the ball. So it kind of makes it a little bit tricky with Petway, doesn't it?
It's Jarrett Stidham that transferred over from Baylor.
Thank you. Yes.
You have old school Seth Russell loved because you owned that guy a couple of years ago. But I think Stidham being able to throw actually helps Petway. Remember last year they struggled at the position, Sean White, and then they had this really, really speedy freshman that couldn't throw to save his fucking life. I think it helps Petway, and Petway's a truck, dude. Remember, like, he just runs through people. I would love to be on Petway again this year. I think having a quarterback that teams actually have to account for would only really serve to help him. He'll still get all the goal line work anyway.
Right. Okay. And then let's just do a few wide receivers. Who do you like in wide receiver land this year?
Okay.
Christian Kirk. Come on. We owned him last year. I know you're going to say it.
They spread the ball around a lot, actually. So
at Texas A&M, yes.
Yeah, so I'm kind of off of that, to tell you the truth.
Ooh, I'm shocked you loved them last year.
I did. But remember, you got to put it in context. We were able to pick him up. For some reason, he got dropped. Oh, he got injured. Remember, he missed a couple of weeks.
In the middle of the season.
Yeah, too much talent. We'll grab him. We'll hold him. But, I mean, if you're going to have to spend a third-round pick on him, look, if we're going to draft a wideout in the third round, we're going to draft a wideout that's clear-cut number one. At worst, number two in a high-octane offense, guaranteed.
Michael Gallup of Colorado State.
To get a lot of volume. Yes, I love Gallup. Another one I think you're going to disagree is going to be Steve Ishmael of Syracuse. Because remember what Emba Adetawo, oh man, I pronounced that right too, did for Syracuse last year, dude. He was a PPR machine. He was scoring touchdowns left and right. There's no reason why. Ishmael was there last year. Ishmael played. He should be able to step into that role. It's still a high-octane offense. Dino Babers brought over his fucking Bowling Green offense. I like him, and I think, I don't want to say he's under the radar, but I think he's a number one wideout that you're going to be able to get in the third round.
Yeah, know? Actually, I would agree with you. He was a PPR machine last year, and we do Fantrax, and Fantrax is mostly PPR, so I'm a big advocate. I'm good with that. And we already talked about Richie James. He's a first-round pick of Middle Tennessee.
Should be the first.
Cortland Sutlin should be a probably a second-round pick out of SMU, a guy you've talked about before.
Yeah.
Do you have any other tricks up your sleeve?
Tell me how you feel about this. We watched a lot of Louisiana Tech last year.
We did.
So
we owned your boy.
Carlos Henderson was terrific, and Trent Taylor, who I love so much.
Both guys got drafted to the NFL, yeah?
Yeah. Are gone. And so the guy that's supposed to step in, his name is Teddy Veal. I have no idea what he looks like. I don't know if he's tall. I don't know if he's fast. I have no fucking idea. But all I know is, if he's going to be the number one wideout in that offense,
he likely is.
He should. Yeah, he should produce. And again, because there's a little bit of unknown there, maybe you can get him in the fourth or fifth round with a shit ton of upside. Because, dude, Carlos Henderson and Trent Taylor last year, without, you know, looking, I guarantee you were top 10 wideouts at worst.
Okay, what do you think of Amon Richards of the Miami Hurricanes? Last year, he actually caught 82 balls.
So then the question is, because I really don't know, is who's stepping in for Kaya, and is he good enough? Like, how's the offense going to lean? To me, I think Richt is going to lean on his running game a lot, and that's why I was really happy to highlight Walton.
Richt, their new head coach, who was at Georgia for many, many years and did a damn good job. He's all about running, right? He's a great running back coach. I still think the receivers are going to get theirs, and I'm not too worried about a brand new quarterback because Kaya was very inconsistent for me last year.
I like Kaya, man.
I don't know why he came out.
Hey, the Lions drafted Kaya.
Don't know why he came out last year. I think another year in college would have done him a ton of good.
I do agree with that because there was a lot of potential there.
Okay. Anybody else you want to talk about?
I think that was mostly it. And again, you know, next week we can go through the wideouts or all the position players that we don't too much love. I know there were people that stuck out to me that I feel are just getting overdrafted or too highly ranked.
Yep. And so in our next podcast, what we'll do is we'll definitely dive deeper into college football, where we'll start swinging the pendulum and we'll do more college football talk than we do baseball talk. We'll, of course, continue with baseball, and we will start ramping up NFL very soon as I finally put up the NFL Fantasy League I've been doing one at work for over 10 years. I finally got it started. I'm actually collecting money already for it. We'll get into that stuff.
Yeah, we're going to have to, because by the time we tackle our next podcast, it's going to be August, and we got to start mixing in the NFL stuff. The juices are flowing at this point for me too, so it works.
That's right. And I want to remind people that you can find us at our Facebook page. We are the Fantasy Advice Bros at Fantasy Advice Bros at facebook.com. Like us, hate us, preferably like us. If there's people or players you want us to talk about, whether it's baseball, college football, or NFL, feel free to leave us feedback. We are open to it. And I want to remind the people about one more thing. I do an anime podcast with my friend Hanley. We host Anime Titans, and you can also find Anime Titans podcast at facebook.com. And Rams, I want to tell you I had a lot of fun, and thank you for joining.
Yeah, absolutely. This was fun.
Thanks for listening to Fantasy Advice Bros, presented by Gabber Media.